Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghost of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm Kelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 93 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today, we'll be discussing chapter 19 of A Clash of Kings. That's Arya 5.
And what we're going to do is we're going to chat about the chapter, we're going to try not to spoil any future plot points for you, and hopefully, while we're doing all that, we'll provide you with some entertainment along the way.
I really like it when you sort of do jazz on that. You know, you don't just read it out as written. You just... Well, flourishes here and there.
It's the 93rd time I've done it, so you know sometimes I got to mix it up.
We'll summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the TV show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes; they'll provide you some additional information that will help you if you're not reading along. How are you, Michele?
I'm doing well. I'm a little tired, but I'm recovering from my long weekend of little sleep.
Well, do tell.
Molly had a swim meet, three days of morning sessions that started at 6 a.m. So that required me to be up before 5 a.m. to get her to the pool by 6 a.m.
Good Lord.
Luckily, you know, nowadays spectators aren't allowed, so I can pay $20 and stream it at home, so I didn't have to sit there for 5 hours.
Did you do that?
Yes, I did. I do every meet. Yes. I know, as if I don't pay enough for swimming.
Wait, she doesn't know whether or not you're doing that.
She doesn't know. I could just tell her, good job, like assuming that an event has happened. That's a good point.
But wait. Slow down here. Sorry to haul you up on this, but... You get to, there's another place you can see her times without watching the meet, right?
Yes, Meet Mobile gives me her times. Yes.
Which doesn't cost $20 every meet.
No, it's $6 a year.
$6 a year, okay. Kelly, I want you to talk to your financial advisor about this. This is a mistake.
Yeah. Well, it is a drop in the bucket in the overall cost of competitive year-round swimming.
It's quite a big drop. I'm not sure how big the bucket is, but that's not a small drop.
They actually just raised the price. It was $15 for an event. I mean, for a meet, and now it's this past weekend was $20. And I did complain to my other swim parents over text, $20? What are they trying to do? But I still paid for it.
Do they all do it too?
Yes, yes, for the most part, most of them do.
I have to say, one of the things that I have learned by living in the United States is just how much money parents are willing to spend for their children.
Uh-huh, yes.
Just generally.
Rather than coming up with a podcast, we should have probably come up with a way of marketing something to children and have their parents pay for it. Because parents will pay just about anything if their children want to do it.
Yeah. It's extraordinary to me, especially sports. I mean, to me, it seems like swimming isn't a sport that shouldn't cost very much. It should be fairly cheap.
It has to do with lane space because there's a lot of swim teams in the area in a finite amount of lane space.
Right. But I suppose so.
They also have to hire professional coaches, you know, like people whose this is their career as swim coaches, at least once you reach a certain level. So I'm not entirely justifying the amount of money that I pay.
Yes, I'm not trying to abuse you. But anyway, do you have actually a good story from the swim meet?
Oh, no.
What did you watch?
It wasn't her best. Wasn't her best meet. But for someone it was. There was a national age group record set in an event that Molly was in. Unfortunately, it wasn't Molly.
Where did she come?
She did not come anywhere near. Claire Curzan, something like that. She broke Missy Franklin, who is Molly's swim idol, Missy Franklin, Molly loves Missy Franklin. She broke her 100 freestyle long course 15-16 record that had stood since 2011. So 10 years this record had stood.
Wait, what was the... the 15-16 was the age group. I thought that was the year she set it in. I see.
Yeah, 15. She's the girl's 15. Yeah.
And Molly was in that race.
Yes, not in that heat.
About that. Oh, she wasn't in the same heat. Okay.
Yes. No, she was in the event, not in the same heat. No.
Yeah.
That the girl put up a 53. I want to say 53.3 something in 100 meters long course. That's 50 meters each direction. That's blazing for a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
Molly was over a minute. I'll tell you that. I can't remember exactly what her time was, but she wasn't within 4 seconds of that girl, I'm pretty sure.
Well, that's perfectly reasonable. Well, congratulations vicariously to Molly.
Right. At least she can say, I was in an event with a
you know
national
what?
Record.
It was Molly's presence that spurred that girl onto greatness. What it was. She was like...
Yes. Anyway.
I don't have much, but I had my family weekend family Zoom call. And it's become a running joke that so we all take a turn describing our week.
Yeah.
And we do it by age. So my mum goes first, then my big sister, then me, then my little sister, little brother. And it's become a running joke that none of us remember the most interesting thing that happened that week.
Right.
Like we all recount our weeks, like nothing happens. We just sit around. And then as we're sort of winding up the call, everyone comes up with something really interesting that actually happened.
So you should move this to the end of the conversation. That segment.
My big sister goes first, and she describes the fact that she works for a political party, and she was describing the fact that there's an election going on in a specific part of London. She lives in London. So you and I would both imagine that this is easy for her to get to. Well, she said she was telling us that she had to drive there, and it took her 2 hours and 20 minutes.
To drive within the city limits.
Right. It's a big city.
Yeah.
Driving can be a real pain. So I was like, oh, wow. And she really went on at length about this. And we kind of like interrupted several times to say it wasn't a very interesting story. It was just about, you know, traffic.
And we said, and I hit another red light, and then another red light.
But my brother, who recently forgot to tell us about being interviewed on television,
right,
jokingly said, have you been on television or anything? And she was like, oh, you're so funny. And we moved on. And then her husband arrived. So she'd already done her part. And we were on to me, and her husband arrived. And he said, oh, did you tell him about us being on television?
I was like, how did you forget? You were directly asked this question.
We were literally prompting you with what actually happened. I told him, I said, we got a minute by minute, like real time account of a 2.5 hour drive across London. A TV show aired.
No, not that I can think of.
TV show aired that they'd seen the filming of, and their car and house were in the scene. Not them personally, but they were very excited about it.
Close enough.
Yeah.
By the way, one benefit to me being up pre-5 a.m. is that I had a very easy time finding gas because there weren't gas lines at that time of morning.
We went to the beach last weekend,
right?
As you know, and I drove back and emptied the car of gasoline and didn't think about it and left my wife, who has to drive to work every day, in a real bind. And she ended up having to queue for gas. And
yeah, I think I saw yesterday 72% of gas stations in our state are currently out of gas.
Yeah.
So it is
doghouse for me. All right. Let's get down to business. How did we leave Arya Stark? Last we saw of Arya, she was escaping from the Holdfast that was at the southern tip of the God's Eye Lake. It was under siege by Armory Lorch's men. She, Gendry, Hutpie, and Lommy were escaping. And the Crying Girl. I've got to put her in these notes. Leaving everyone else to their fate. Arya did stop to throw the chained up men an axe to help them escape.
Right.
But we don't know what happened to them. McKelly, why don't we give them the summary of this one?
Okay. Well, I've not practiced the summary at all, so this might take the next 20 minutes. Arya and company, including Gendry, Hotpie, Lommy, and the newly named Weasel, previously known as the Crying Girl, they head back to the Holdfast in the daylight to just an awful scene, but also a little bit of good news. Three of their party, Cutjack, Kurz, and Tarber, had barricaded themselves in and managed to survive, and Armory Lorch didn't have the patience to starve them out. Unfortunately, they have to bury Yoren. They found him dead. But his body was found surrounded by Lannister corpses, so it looks like he took a few of the bad guys out on his way. The crew did decide to keep heading north, and they went around the western edge of the God's Eye, it appears, and Kurz, the poacher, was injured in the fight at the Holdfast, and unfortunately his wound festered and he succumbs to that. Cutjack and Tarber then claim his belongings and go poaching themselves, but they never return. Lommy, too, was injured in the Holdfast and is now needing to be carried on a litter.
The gang see a village ahead, and reconnaissance proves that there is life there. Friend or foe is harder to discern. After some debate, Arya and Gendry go ahead to see if they can find food. They're on starvation rations of bugs, worms, and acorns. Yes. On the walk to the village, Gendry confronts Arya about her gender. She tries to deny, but obviously can't really pass the old show me test. She agonizes, but ultimately confides her real name. Gendry is impressed, and then quite funny, with m'ladies to her. She swears him to secrecy. He reassures her that he will keep the secret, and that Hot Pie and Lammy are too stupid to notice. As they approach the village, an ominous smell confronts them.
Arya goes on ahead, passing under a long gibbet which still holds the remains of many of the villagers. She sees soldiers sitting by a fire. She can't make out the sigil, but the bodies around convince her that they must be Lannister soldiers. As she watches, more soldiers drag a prisoner over. The prisoner is wearing a bull helmet. Gendry has been captured. He's thrown into a building which appears to be a prison of some sort, as a boy tries unsuccessfully to get out when the door is open. As Arya watches, a hunting party returns with a deer, and the cooking smells brings the rest of the contingent out. It's a considerable force. A gust of wind reveals the lion sigil and another sigil with three dogs on it.
She heads back to the others to get help in rescuing Gendry. They're not thrilled with the prospect and suggest abandoning him. She gets mad, and Hot Pie eventually agrees to help. She heads back, quiet as a mouse, with Hot Pie clumping along in her wake. They return to her prior vantage point to survey the scene, but are instantly captured thanks to Hot Pie's noise.
Arya receives a mail-fisted wallop upside her head as Needle is taken from her and is confronted with the biggest man she's ever seen, and she grew up with Hodor, so... It must be Gregor Clegane. And while she's dazed, Hot Pie breaks down and tells the soldiers about Lommy and Weasel. The pair are marched back to the prior camp, where Lommy tells them that Weasel heard them coming and ran off. Arya hopes that she just keeps on running. The soldiers insist that Lommy get up, but he says that he has to be carried. The nearest soldier runs him through and laughs at Lommy's stupidity.
Yes, not good news for Arya.
No. Poor Lommy.
Oh, yes, worse for Lommy. That's being unfair. Where there's life, there's hope. So, one thing I noticed, it's weird that we normally go back and forth on that and finish with me. It was kind of slightly weird to finish with you.
It was. I noticed that as I was wrapping up that there wasn't you below me. I was like, oh no.
I was looking at it and I was like,
I'm the anchor on this.
Yeah, exactly.
I better not screw it up.
Just like the previous Arya chapter, there's a lot of sort of juxtaposing of the beauty and tranquility of the God's Eye Lake.
Yeah, I noticed that too, yeah.
Yeah, with the man-made horrors and miseries. The village that they're spying on looks very tranquil and appealing. She sees swans gliding across the lake to a small islet, and they're careless of the war. She longs when she sees them to both be a swan and to eat one. Right. She's very hungry.
I get the conflicting emotions there. On one hand, the swans are just carefree, floating out in the flying in the air and floating in the lake.
Plus, if you were a swan, then eating the sort of like lake reeds would be all you'd want to eat.
Right. Yeah, the worms and the bugs that she's currently eating would be a lot more palatable.
It's a twofer. And also that she mentions that the burnished lake fills half their world. So
right.
So pretty scene, but with a lot of horror on the lining.
One of us, maybe both of us, just mentioned a minute ago that they're down to eating bugs and a paste that Kurz taught them how to make out of acorns that she says is quite gross. And I thought about that. It's a far cry from Sansa's version of what Arya is up to, dancing and sewing and playing in Winterfell. Not quite. But
although, actually, I think Arya might actually choose eating acorns to sew.
She just might. And dancing. Although, she did pretend
her version of dancing.
Yes, exactly. If it's water dancing, she's all for it. But now, it's not exactly said that they are heading up the west side of the God's Eye. But from the description, you get a sense of that. She mentions that there's a small wooded island off to the northeast, which would lead you to believe that they're in the southwest. And when she's walking back from the village, which you would assume they went north to get to the village, so they've turned around and are heading south, the lake is on the left and the trees are on the right.
That's enough for me. Yeah. I'm convinced plus that's the way Yoram was taking them. They wouldn't double back, I think. I think they know.
Yeah, the issue was the reason they had to stop going west is because they ran into that river. But I think his issue with the river was that they couldn't get the wagons across. And so, you know, these kids maybe just waded their way across the river.
Yeah.
But I also wondered that little island, that she sees a wooded island far to the northeast. And she's at the very top of a tree when this chapter starts. She has climbed to the top of a tree. And I wondered if possibly she's seeing the edge of the Isle of Faces.
Well, that's the only known island in the God's Eye Lake. But it seems like it's too far away to me. But I don't know.
That was my first thought, too. But being that she's at the very top of a tree, if the tree's tall enough, she might be able to see out to the lake.
And there's a tricky sort of like loss of time here. We don't know how long they've been going. I mean, they've been going long enough to have meals and have got very hungry. So they've been going for days, it feels like.
And she mentions that they've passed through, everything they've passed through has been burned down, and she mentions castles and villages and houses fields.
They could be quite a bit further up the west side than we imagine them to be. So yes, then maybe it is the Isle of Faces, yeah.
Maybe. We don't know. I was just wondering if it might possibly be. But like I just said, she mentions in the description that the Lannister forces have basically burned everything that could possibly be burned and killed everything that could possibly die. They've burned, she mentions, farms, villages, castles, septs, all burned. And so when they come across this town, or little village, I guess, that actually has some motion going on in it. It's quite rare and unexpected.
Right, yeah. Yeah, but actually, now you've just sort of taken me down a thought path that isn't in our planned discussion here. But
perfect.
They really are causing themselves a problem because let's assume the Lannisters win. So they're going to be secreted in King's Landing. King's Landing is going to be their home. Uh-huh. The Riverlands are one of the two major areas that feed King's Landing. I mean, that's why King's Landing is getting very hungry, is because the food has dried up from there.
Right.
The other one being the Reach. But they're basically at war with the Reach now.
Yes.
So there's not going to be much import of food from there until they win the war. But if they continue to win the war the same way they're winning this war, they'll have burned those fields too.
Yep. It seems oddly short-sighted for someone as normally cunning and thoughtful as Tywin Lannister. I mean, not only all that, but on top of it, winter is coming. The Starks have been telling us, you know. Yeah. So they win the war. Now they've got a huge mess that they have to fix, and they have to do it during winter. And they also lose, I mean, if you think about everything that they're destroying, they're losing out on crops, losing out on people, they're losing out on shelter. So they're going to have a shortage of everything. They're burning the forests. They're literally burning the trees. So they might not even have the wood to rebuild shelters with.
Just a thought here. I wonder if that goes to it. I wonder if there's kind of like, we don't know how bad winter gets. I mean, obviously it gets bad at the wall. It gets bad in the north. how bad does it get down here? I mean, do they continue to have harvestable crops even in the winter because it doesn't get that harsh? I mean, I think of Dorne as being very hot.
Right.
So maybe it never gets cold. Maybe the southern reach and stormlands also stay warm enough to continue to have crops throughout the winter.
Possibly, like winter and crops, so, you know, maybe squash and things.
Yes. But I was thinking maybe they're warm enough even to have wheat and things.
Maybe. Yeah, it's a good point.
But if that's true, then maybe that's the plan, is to punish the north and the riverlands for their, you know, because basically now they're going to starve in the winter.
Right.
And their only hope would be to sort of like, I mean, basically, the small folk are going to leave. They're going to head south as refugees.
Yes.
And then when the winter is over, perhaps you can go and pick off the north again.
Yeah.
Because they'll be down to just the nobles who saw it through.
It just seems like, you know, if he's expecting to win this war, all these people are going to be flooding south and they're going to be crowding into the cities that are habitable, and he's just going to be creating a mess for himself and for his family if he's expecting his family to still be on the throne. But they're doing exactly what Tywin asked them to do.
No question.
Yeah. That I think it was Tyrion 9. He told Kevin that he wanted to see the Riverlands afire from the God's Eye to the Red Fork. So they're doing what he wanted them to do. So this is intentional. Yeah. Now, I wondered if maybe he was just, when he said that, he had just learned about them capturing Jaime. Maybe he was lashing out in pain that he feels like he's lost Jaime. And, you know, maybe cooler heads prevail. He would not have sent them out with quite that destructive tendency.
The other thing I would say is I would interpret that statement as from the Red Fork in the north all the way down to the northern top, the northern shore of the God's Eye. But basically, Armory Lorch and Gregor Clegane have gone, let's go crazy. And they've gone all the way around the God's Eye.
Right, yeah.
Which is basically burning the crops that are on your side of the line.
Yes.
Which is crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also wondered if maybe he's starting to think he might lose the war, and so he's going to destroy what's available for the victors. I don't know that Tywin would allow himself to think like that they could lose this war. So, but then I also thought that, you know, just last chapter, Littlefinger was seemed super excited about all the wealth he was going to get inheriting that plum of a castle in Harrenhal, but he might want to reconsider because seems like a rather scorched and murdery mess there.
Yes, indeed.
So the chapter kind of begins with Arya. She's up on the top of this tree and she's looking out at this little town. But then she takes us back to the day after the attack at the little holdfast at the south end of the God's Eye. And they go into town and it's just a burnt rubble mess and there's dead bodies everywhere, and I felt like there was a little bit of foreshadowing at the beginning of the chapter because Gendry says they're killed, every one of them, and dogs have been at them too, and Arya says or wolves, and Gendry says dogs, wolves, it makes no matter. And of course we get to the end of the chapter, we've got dogs and the Cleganes and Arya of the wolf sigil coming together, and
so it does make a difference.
I guess it does, yes. I just thought the mention of dogs and wolves at the beginning of chapter set up for there to be a dog at the end of the chapter.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes.
Yeah, but then she backtracks in time to them returning to the holdfast, and she's lost Yoram, and this is another protector and friend and link to home that she's lost. You know, she's suffered a lot of losses.
Yes. Yeah, she thought he was going to be too tough to have killed. She was sure he was going to have survived. But yeah, I mean, if you think of the adult protector friend type people that she's lost, I mean, just a quick list is Ned. Kat is not dead, but she hasn't seen her in coming up probably close to a year now. John, who's gone at the wall, she's seen none of her family since she ran from the Tower of the Hand that day. She lost Sirio. She's lost Yoren. Even Kurz died. And now Tarbor and Cutjack, who are the last people that she was hoping would look after her, they fled as well. So,
well, we don't actually know if they were fled. They may have been killed.
That's a good point, yes.
I'm suspecting they fled. I'm suspecting they looked at these four able-bodied children and one on a stretcher and went, we're better off without these guys.
Yeah, but you know what the weird thing is about Tarbor is that he is described earlier in this book as an orphan boy.
Oh, so he's a child too.
Yeah, now he could be an older child. He could have been like a late teenager child, but way back when Praed died, he was the first one of them to die. They buried him on the side of the road. Is something like an orphan boy named Tarbor threw some acorns over the grave they dug for him. So he was described as an orphan boy as well. So it's kind of weird.
But they did get Kurz's stuff. They got Kurz's poaching gear.
Yes.
So they had the one advantage, and maybe they just decided it wasn't worth sharing their advantage.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, she's just lost. She keeps losing everyone. Micah, Nymeria. All of these Stark, you know, the people, the soldiers and the other people that make up the Stark Brigade have been lost.
And she, of course, knew every one of them. She was friends with them in the way Sansa never was. Yeah.
Yeah. And then now she's lost Lami, which, you know, she didn't seem to love Lami, but he's still a companion. But one of the more painful things is she lost Needle.
Right, right.
And that really hurt. She said that hurt. Well, she doesn't say it. She thinks that hurt worse than the pain in her head when the guy hit her with a mailed fist. In some ways, it kind of reminds me of there's kind of a parallel here with Dany, because Dany's lost her parents, Viserys, Drogo, Rhaego. But of course, she still has Jorah by her side and her blood riders. And she's also still a Khaleesi of a Khalasar. So she's still got people around her.
Yeah, but that's getting to the point where, I mean, Arya almost has as large a Khalasar as Dany.
If you throw a weasel in there, it's pretty close.
Yeah. So Arya flirts with despair at this point. I mean, honestly, who wouldn't, as they bury Yoren? He was the only one who knew her secret.
Right.
So she, which I think it helped her to have one outlet for her secret, somewhere where she could let on that she was a girl.
Yes.
And he had promised to get her to Winterfell. And so now she's got to think to herself, the prospect of that seems very, very distant right now without Yoren.
Yes.
And especially trying to hold this secret in at the same time.
Yeah, and you know, so they decide to continue going north, but she's yet to ever mention the idea of going to Riverrun, and she does know she has family at Riverrun. She's got a grandfather and an uncle. She doesn't know her mom and brother are there, but she knows her grandfather and uncle are there.
But I think we've had this conversation before, though. She doesn't even know who controls Riverrun. I
mean, she doesn't, yes.
You'd hate to walk up there and bump into Jaime Lannister, who would recognize her.
I know you.
Welcome.
But I was thinking about another similarity between Yoren and Sirio Forel. It is, they both had very anticlimactic deaths. Neither of them were seen on camera. Both died... Yeah. When Arya wasn't with them.
Yes, when Arya ran away and left them to die.
Right, yes, they were both defending Arya when they died. Right. And very much unlike Ned's execution, which was a spectacle she was at, she didn't see that either because Yoren made sure she didn't. But these were, we never even found out that Sirio died. We just have assumed that he died. And Yoren died. We found out he died when she came back and found him dead. So,
Yeah.
Anyway, just something I thought about.
Yeah, but I've mentioned, because we've already covered that in the TV show, Sirio's death is very similar in the TV show. Off camera, you don't see it. He's got a stump of a sword against Meryn Tran, so he's in big trouble. But Yoren, they actually give him his glorious death. He fights and kills multiple Lannisters before he's killed, and sort of dies very bravely. So the TV show did change that.
Oh, good for him.
So Hotpie and Lommy think that it's Yoren's fault that they're all dead, that he should have yielded. Easy to say after the fact. I think, as I remember the scene, jokes present themselves, I'm sure. Almry Lorch was not there to talk or parley. He was there for murder and mayhem.
Right.
If they'd yielded, they would have all been killed.
Right. Yeah, we had this discussion last chapter about whether he should have yielded or not. And you just, when he made the decision, he couldn't know the outcome at the time. You just don't know. And it's real easy for those not making the call to be sure of what the right answer would have been after the fact. But he had to make a call based on what the evidence he was presented and the best that he thought he could protect his people. And probably they would have killed them anyway. They might have taken them hostage. It's possible, but...
Yeah. It is interesting that Gregor Clegane is taking prisoners, because Armory Lorch clearly didn't take any prisoners.
Right.
Well, that's not true. We don't know how many bodies they found. Maybe he did take prisoners too. But it's hard to imagine what they would do with prisoners. I mean, they're just out there pillaging the Riverlands.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you need prisoners for, really?
Well, as we learn in this chapter, it looks like they're taking prisoners to do some not so nice things to them to try and get them to turn over Beric Dondarrion. But of course, seems like a lot of people don't know where or who Beric Dondarrion is.
Right. You would think about 99% of the people you meet in the Riverlands wouldn't have a clue who that was.
Right.
You know? So Kurz's death is particularly unfortunate because he was the poacher. He had kept them relatively well fed until now.
Yeah.
And so they are down to just eking out an existence from food that they can find and forage for. As I wrote that, by the way, I discovered I don't know how to spell the word eking. It took me like a minute and a half to find the right spelling of that. I had double E-K. I had E-A-K.
As long as it's phonetically right, it works for us.
The best meal they've managed since Curse's death is a frog. So,
exactly. Right, yeah. That's quite a step up from bugs and worms.
Although I've eaten frog's legs and it's quite nice.
Yeah?
Quite tasty.
I've never had them.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't eat them now given that I don't eat meat.
Right. But, yes.
I did eat them once. They were all right. Kind of like chicken.
Yeah. That's what I've heard.
So could Jack and Tabor have left them to their fate, or they're perhaps dead? So farewell if you're dead, and screw you if you've left the kids to their fate.
Right. Yeah. Like you said, it does feel like they possibly left them, but in this environment, they could have run into one of the hunting parties that came back with that deer, and could have been killed by those people.
They could be in the prison with Gendry.
Right. They could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Find that out next chapter, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, I didn't say this earlier, but Cutjack was a stonemason and Tarbor was an orphan boy. So, neither of them were particularly well suited for life on the run in a war zone in the wild.
Yeah, although the stonemason is probably strong.
Yeah.
Come in handy, sure. I suppose. So, excitingly, Weasel has stopped crying. Oh, sorry, Weasel is the name they've given to the crying girl, but she stopped crying. So I guess this earned her a name once she stopped crying. My guess is that basically now she sees that everyone is down at her level of misery, that she has nothing to cry about, so she stopped.
Yeah, I thought maybe, remember Dany, she dreamed that dragon dream, and she said the tears turned to steam in her dream, and when she woke up, all the grief has been burned out of her. And I'm thinking, maybe Weasel's just like, I can't do it anymore. I just cannot cry another tear. I've cried
out. It was an epic cry. I'll give that to Weasel. She cried for a long time. So Gendry picks up on the secret of Arya's gender. So it's kind of nice for Arya, I think, because losing Yoren meant that she was now the sole owner of the secret.
Right.
And she can unburden herself a little bit knowing that Gendry knows. And he's a good lad. He may tease with the occasional milady, but he's going to keep the secret as much as he can.
It seems like it. It definitely... He seems different than Lommy or Hot Pie. I would fear if Lommy or Hot Pie knew that...
Yeah, they're blabbermouth idiots.
Yes,
yeah.
Or, you know, in this situation here, if they knew that she was a prize and that they could benefit from this, they would absolutely rat her out in a second. Well,
but again, she didn't... She would not... Should her gender come out, she doesn't have to reveal she's Arya Stark.
Right.
She did that for Gendry because she trusts him.
Yes.
I totally... Especially after this chapter, I wouldn't trust Hot Pie with anything.
No, nothing at all, no. Yeah. No, you're right. The bigger concern would be the identity. The gender... Yeah. Really doesn't matter here. I don't think they would care one way or the other. But
right.
The identity, pretty big deal. That's...
But the gender, I think having a co-confidant in the gender hiding is actually helpful to her, because if Hot Pie says, you know, you look like a girl, Gendry could say something like, oh, I've seen his
right.
thing.
Yes.
You know.
He's all man.
Yeah, exactly.
I kind of chuckled.
Whereas if Arya says that, no one's going to believe her.
Right, yeah. You need a second party to back up your story.
Exactly, yeah.
I kind of enjoyed the irony of how starstruck Gendry was when he realized that Arya was a lady. And not only a lady, but the daughter of the Hand of the King. He became like really tongue-tied, and he was miladying this and miladying that. But meanwhile, he's the son of the king. He just doesn't know it. So... He could even technically trump Arya.
Yes. Listeners, I'm going to take you on an aside now, because McKelly put a little Easter egg joke in the script there. He said that Gendry was starstruck, but in the script he spelt it Stark
struck. I didn't even mean to do that. That's how clever I am. Subconsciously, I'm clever.
So Gendry, just to Arya, is kind of like frank about Lommy's chances. You know, I mean, basically they have no way to treat the wound.
Yeah,
he's getting worse, he's weighing them down. Gendry's like, we've got to leave him behind. But then later on in the chapter, Lommy pays him back, because when Arya returns to Hot Pie, Lommy and Weasel to say that Gendry's been captured, Lommy's like, well let's leave him then, because we don't need it. But Arya points out, not unfairly, that they need Gendry to carry Lommy,
right?
Because her and Hot Pie aren't doing it.
Yeah. His argument is, if we just hide, that group's going to move on before too long. And he's probably right about that. But first of all, you know, they're leaving a comrade behind, which not great form there. But also, we just saw a hunting party come back. They could very well stumble upon these kids who are hiding while they're out hunting food. So it's not a guarantee anyway. And... You know, she's right. She says, Lommy, you're stupid. You won't survive without Gendry, because he's the only one that can carry you. We can't carry you. Not for permanently. But also, they just a real quick mention, the description mentions that Gendry's growing a beard, and it's coming in thick and black, just like his father's.
Right. But I think... It's hard to know, but it feels like he's got beyond the point of being recognized. He's far enough away from King's Landing, and nobody here is interested enough in Robert's bastard children for it to really matter.
I agree entirely, yes. I just noticed that the description specifically mentioned how thick and black and coarse his beard was growing in, and it's the same description used about Robert's beard. But so Hot Pie and Lommy have this plan. And they keep talking about it the whole way through. They just want to yield to something or someone, really. I don't even think it doesn't matter who. They just really feel the need to yield. So their plan is to walk into this town and just yield. And they think, well, it's a fishing village, so they'll sell us fresh fish. And we had just learned in this chapter that everything has been burned or killed. So what would make them think that this one little village is still a sleepy little fishing village that will provide them with fish for some work or fee or something? It's even closer to the front lines than the last village that Armory Lorch destroyed. So
yes. So the sights and sounds has Arya approaches the village are pretty ominous. The dead corpses strung up. There's sobbing and screaming coming from the storehouse, including a loud scream filled with pain. So, as McKelly said, that they're looking for Beric Dondarrion, and they're perhaps torturing people to try and get that information, but nobody would know who that is.
Right. Unless you know who that is, you're not going to know who that is.
Right. Oh, I definitely saw him. Yeah, yeah. Right. Tall fella. Yeah, just three doors down.
Yeah, the very first thing the guard says when he approaches Lami at the very end of the chapter is, you know, basically, tell us where Beric Dondarrion is and there'll be food in it for you. And he's like, who? And the other guard says, see, I told you it was a waste of time.
Right. I guess, I mean, Dondarrion must be, you know, he's been working this sort of like harrying the southern flank of the Lannister army for months now.
Right.
You'd think that he might be getting help from some villagers. Certainly. So it's not totally daft that a villager might know, but
right,
just seems like a bit of a long shot, really.
Yeah, it's certainly they've had to have the help of some villagers, or at least have come through towns and villages. So people probably do know.
And I would imagine that if I was Dondarrion, I would occasionally visit villages just to tell them, you know, hey, look, Clegane and Lorch are coming and they're just murdering everyone in the villages. There's no kindness being shown by them. Get out. Go. Hide.
Sure.
Or either hide or run away south.
Yeah.
Don't stay here.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And it seems pretty clear that Beric Dondarrion and his people, you know, we've mentioned several times that they just keep putting up the good fight, even though the king and the hand of the king that sent them on this mission are dead. But it seems like they've just decided to lash out against these atrocities that are being committed here in the Riverlands in their own covert way, rather than, you know, join Rob and his army and just add a handful of members to their ranks.
I'm pretty sure Book 7 is going to end with, and Beric Dondarrion laid down his sword.
Right. And sat the Iron Throne.
Yeah, maybe last one standing. Yeah. So Gendry gets taken captive. He's wearing his shiny helmet, which is how Arya knew from afar that it was Gendry who was taken captive.
Yeah.
Possibly not the smartest move in a dark... It was in the dark, right?
It was in the dusk. So it was heading toward darkness. Yeah.
So the moon, the setting sun might glint off it. The campfire could.
Yeah, it was exactly what I thought. When I was like, why would you wear a shiny helmet on a secret covert scouting mission? But then Arya wonders, do these men know that the queen wants him? And I thought about it. It's not likely that those gold cloaks that were looking for him made it to the western shore of the God's Eye because they were heading up the King's Road. So it's unlikely that they would have told him. Of course, they can move a lot. Everyone can move a lot faster than these kids. So it's possible they.
Yeah.
But it's.
But I told you in the last Arya chapter's comparison to the TV show. In the TV show, they were still looking for Gendry.
Right. Yeah.
But it so happened that Gendry's helmet was by Lommy's dead body.
Yes.
And
I remember
so they pretended that Lommy was Gendry.
Yeah.
But Armory Lorch absolutely said, we're looking for the armorer's apprentice,
you know,
with the bull helmet.
Which he did not do in the book, so...
Right, which they did not do in the book, which I think makes more sense. I think this, why such a pointless exercise of chasing down Gendry wouldn't make it this far. It's just too far removed in time and distance from this.
Absolutely.
Person who cares about this, which is Cersei Lannister and nobody else.
Yeah. At the very least, a bird might have gotten to Tywin in Harrenhal that said, hey, Dad, I need you to find this kid. But then you've got to wonder, would Tywin care to carry out Cersei's hunt for Robert's bastards? You know?
Exactly.
He may be like,
he
no.
would not.
We've got bigger fish to fry.
Exactly. We have bigger Riverlands fish to fry.
Right. The way Hot Pie gets caught is a crow lands on him. He's actually being somewhat quiet-ish. They're making it through trying to get to this storehouse where Gendry's being kept. But a crow lands on him, and he kind of yelps. And And then a guard says, "Hey, who's there?" And he jumps up and says, "I yield." And I thought, you know, by this time, Arya had stayed after Gendry got caught for a while and watched the guard shift change. So it's got to be nighttime by now. If he had just laid quietly, they might never have, they might just thought it was the crows quacking and stuff, you know?
Right, right.
But yeah. That's not what he does.
Wow, that crow caught a huge mouse just then.
Yeah. I honestly think there'd been too much talk from Lommy about yielding. And so
Hot Pie was just hair trigger.
Yes, exactly.
Crow landed on him. I yield.
Yeah. But it's in that melee that ensues when Hot Pie gets caught that Arya loses Needle. And that was really her last connection to her family, because Jon gave it to her. And as she says, "Jon gave it to me and Syrio taught me how to use it." And now she's got really nothing left.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes.
So, while Arya regains her senses from the bash on the head, Hot Pie yields up Lommy and Weasel.
Ah.
And so the soldiers march then back. This whole chapter is like back and forth.
It is.
Between two points. It's like table tennis. And so... sort of as she's sort of finally sort of clearing her head, they get back to Lommy, where they discover that Weasel has run away when he heard them coming back, because they were not quiet Arya can be. So, and Arya thinks, run as fast as you can and never come back.
Yeah, and I get that thought, but at the same time, the girl is like 2 or 3. So you can't imagine she's going to survive very long on her own. She might be better off.
Is she that young?
Yeah.
I thought she was like 4 or 5.
I believe the description says she's like barely above a baby, like a toddler type, back when they first picked her up. Something around there. She's very young. But even if she was 4 or 5, it's unlikely she would have been able to spend very much time on her own and survive. Especially one thing that we haven't mentioned is that they hear wolves howling all
every
the time.
Night,
multiple times in this chapter alone. They hear wolves howling, so a little girl on her own might not make it long.
Yeah. One group of characters that didn't get mentioned in this chapter that I thought might were Jack and Hagar, Rorge and Biter, the three captives who Arya threw an axe to. So maybe they got burned to death and there's no more of them, or there was no mention of seeing their bodies in the hole fast, so I presume that they escaped. Could they be a rescue party for her here?
Yeah, well, one of them maybe. First of all, I don't imagine Jaqen would stick around with Rorg and Biter if he wasn't chained.
I don't know.
To them.
Honestly, if you're in a horrible war zone, having two psychotic lunatics as friends might not be a bad idea.
There is that. But certainly they owe her, you know.
Yeah.
She saved their lives single-handedly. So, but whether Biter or Rorg would care to repay a favor or debt like that, I'm not sure. Yeah. But I think Jack and Hagar would.
But they might want to be in league with him. I mean, they must recognize that he's a smarter guy than they are. I mean, they might want to stick with him.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, he tries to run away, they follow him.
Leave me alone!
I also wondered if the wolves might be her potential rescuers here. You know, the wolves are clearly circling around her a little bit. Could it be that they're keeping tabs on her?
That was my thought when I first read the book with the last chapter. When she heard that wolf howling, I thought, oh, this is going to be it. Nymeria's going to save them. Did not have
but,
that.
But there is. So the wolves could be Nymeria's hench wolves who are doing her bidding and looking out for and will rescue Arya. Or they might just have seen injured children and thought, tomorrow's dinner.
Right, easy prey.
Yeah. So possibly a force for the Starks, but maybe just a pack of wolves.
Yeah.
I did have a little vision as I was thinking about all this of Weasel coming riding in on Nymeria's back like Lone Ranger to rescue
him. That would be fun. Yes. I'm not sure it's in George Martin to write something like that, but it would be fun.
That is non-canon, I think. All right, what do you got for background?
Background. So last chapter, we talked about the bloodiest battle of the Dance of the Dragons. It was the battle by the lakeshore, or otherwise known as the Fish Feed. And it took place along these same western shores of the God's Eye. But today, we're going to find out what happened after that battle.
Thank goodness.
Now, as a refresher, the Fish Feed found the Lannister soldiers, who are Targaryen Green supporters at the time, surrounded by Targaryen Black supporters made up of men from the north and the Riverlands. The Lannister forces retreated into the water and were cut to bits. However, both sides suffered heavy casualties. So when word reached Sir Criston Cole, who's Hand of the King to Aegon II, and Prince Aemon Targaryen, the king's brother and regent, who just happened to be on the other side of the God's Eye at Harrenhal at the time, they argued over how to respond. Sir Criston decided to march south from Harrenhal through the Riverlands to join the army of Ormund Hightower and Prince Daeron Targaryen, who were marching through the Reach. Aemon, on the other hand, decided to burn the Riverlands on the back of Vhagar. So apparently this is a wartime trend. You just burn the Riverlands. That's step one, burn the Riverlands. So Sir Criston Cole and his 3,600 troops went south along the western shore of the God's Eye, but they were harassed on their journey by Black supporters using guerrilla tactics. Turns out the Riverlords took to burning their own forests and villages to make passage difficult for Sir Criston and his troops. Sir Criston led men into an ambush at a stony ridge south of the God's Eye. The Greens were outnumbered 2-1 by the forces of the Riverlands and the North. Sir Criston held a parley with the three Black supporter leaders, Sir Garibald Grey, Sir Pate of Longleaf, and Roderick Dustin. Criston offered to surrender, but his offer was rejected. So Sir Criston, who was both renowned for his sword skill, as well as being the Lord Commander of Aegon II's Kingsguard, prepared to fight all three men at once. However, before he could do so, he was killed by arrows fired by a man named Red Rob Rivers and two of his longbowmen. And with Sir Criston dead, Lord Dustin led the Black's vanguard, which included both his Winter Wolves and the River Knights, and the Greens fell quickly with hundreds dying while trying to flee that ridge. After the battle, Sir Garibald Grey said, "Today was butchery, not battle," and soon the battle became known as the Butcher's Ball. And with the death of Sir Criston Cole, this battle was the high point of Queen Rhaenyra Targaryen's efforts. However, with Prince Aemon Targaryen and King Aegon still alive, the Greens were still very much a threat.
Thank you, Kelly. Interesting. So, comparison with the TV show, I somewhat spoiled this chapter with my last TV show comparison because some of this happened in the TV show at the Holdfast, and so I talked about it.
Okay.
So I mentioned that TV Lommy was killed in exactly the way he died here, but directly at the Holdfast battle.
Sure.
But he grabbed Gendry's helmet, and so that was a difference. Everyone ends up captured directly at the battle, so this whole chapter is basically redundant, and so it's not in the TV show, because they all end up under the Lannisters. But armory launches rather than Gregor Clegane's, but, you know,
right,
under Lannister captivity.
Sure.
I also ruined, earlier than that, I ruined Gendry's confrontation with Arya about her gender, because that happened in the TV show way back when the Gold Cloaks came looking for Gendry. That's when they had that conversation. So Gendry's actually been in on this secret for a while.
Yeah, right.
That scene was very, very similar, just the two of them talking about it. And nothing really to compare. But sorry for the spoilers. Pedantry Corner. I don't have a lot of pedantry here, but I do have a couple of character decisions which I'm a little bit concerned about. Arya goes back to Hot Pie and Lommy and says, "Let's go and rescue Gendry." Her plan is to go into a fortified camp of hardened soldiers, murder 20 of them, and free her friend.
Well, that's what Hot Pie thinks she's going to do. What she says, we only have to kill two of them because the two keeping guard over the storehouse.
Oh, I misunderstood that. I thought that's what she was thinking. Oh, that was Hot Pie's idea.
Well, Hot Pie said, she said, you got to come help me free Gendry. And he said, how many soldiers? And she said, 20. And he said, we can't kill 20. And she said, we only have to kill two, the two guards watching the storehouse where they're holding all of them.
Okay, so I did her a disservice. I'm sorry. I thought she'd been watching too many action movies. Against all the odds.
Right.
Yeah. So in many ways, I think the way it panned out is probably about the best result she could have hoped for, to get captured quickly and easily without too much damage.
Sure.
Because if she got any further, she might have been killed.
Yes. Yeah. Very much, yes.
And one other character flaw is Lommy. I mean, just Lommy is a character flaw, an embodiment of a character flaw. He's been on this litter, and all he's done is complain the whole time.
Right.
I mean, come on, have some empathy. Stop your whining.
Yeah, definitely thinking about himself, about himself and his ailments.
Can't call that pedantry. Know plenty of people like that.
You wouldn't want to be stuck in this situation with them, though, I feel.
News and notes.
So, Hafþór Björnsson, otherwise known as the Mountain in the Game of Thrones TV show, he also happens to be a world champion strongman competitor.
Uh-huh.
And he's preparing for his boxing match with fellow strongman Eddie Hall in September. But last week, he posted a YouTube video of him grappling with UFC star and fellow Icelander Gunnar Nelson. Now, Bjornsson's been dropping weight to prepare for his fight, but he still weighs in at 340 pounds and stands 6 feet 9 inches tall. Now, I don't know if you want to do the stones conversion for us there for our...
It's about 24 stone. A bit more than 24 stone.
Okay.
That is a huge human being.
Now, Nelson, on the other hand, his competitor here, 170 pounds, 5 feet 11 inches. So he's giving up about a foot in height and nearly 200 pounds in weight.
I feel like we might have mentioned this scene in Life of Brian where the Christian runs away from the gladiator until the gladiator has a heart attack. But that's how I imagine this fight will go.
Just keep running.
Just charging around the ring to stay away from him.
Now, I watched the fight. It was not really a fight. It was a sparring situation. But afterward, Bjornsson said that Nelson did have the upper hand the whole time. But Nelson said that Bjornsson surprised him with his conditioning. So, he might have outlasted the Christian running, and also his body control, that he didn't put himself in many bad positions that would have given Nelson the upper hand. Plus, he did mention that his sheer strength, size, and weight allowed him to break out of some holds.
No kidding. Yeah. Nelson weighs less than me, and he's actually fighting against a mountain.
Right. Now, Nelson, unlike you, Nelson does have a second degree black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So...
that helps. He doesn't know about my third degree black belt.
No, that was your third degree burn you got on your arm from taking cookie tray out of the oven.
Okay, we got a nice review from number one Curtis on Apple Podcasts in the UK. A great show. The Ghost of Harrenhal podcast is an entertaining and overall great Game of Thrones podcast and analysis. The hosts have great discussions. If you enjoy Game of Thrones, I definitely recommend taking a listen. Well, thank you, number one, Curtis.
Yes,
we appreciate that.
Thank you. You know, I have a theory about terminology in our reviews. When people refer to us as a Game of Thrones podcast or mention Game of Thrones, I feel like those are the ones who are not reading along or have already read it. I think they're the listeners who are going along through the story with us. Because I think most of the time, people who have already read the books or who are reading along with us refer to us as a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. Just a hunch I have.
Very interesting. Could be true. Maybe that's a Discord survey that needs to be had.
Right. Yes. I like it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's wrap this up. The Mountain appears to be taking prisoners. So there is possibly hope here for Arya. Lorch, on the other hand, seemed to just be killing everyone. So maybe she's fallen into the right psychopath's hands.
Maybe. Lommy might disagree. But
Lami was going to get it. Gendry was ready to do that to Lami.
Yeah,
and he's a nice guy.
Although the hanging dead bodies and the screams from the storehouse don't exactly bode well for.
I'm going to say, Gregor Clegane, the misunderstood, that the ones hanging from the gibbet were the ones who had Lami's poor attitude.
That's what it was. You guys are on my damn nerves.
It is hard to imagine how Arya, Hot Pie, and Gendry can demonstrate their worth to a mounted band of brigands who are on the move. But hopefully they can.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe Gendry can because he's getting big and strong. But
right.
He would also have to be evil.
He could be trained into being evil, possibly.
Right. I mean, handy in a fight, but is he going to want to go and slaughter villagers with them?
Right.
I'm thinking he probably would not. Yeah.
It's not really in his temperament or personality.
Yeah. And the screams from the storehouse also need to be borne in mind. I mean,
yes.
Maybe some dental work going on.
That's what it is. No, non-Novocaine dental work. It must be that.
Exactly. Arya's skills keep getting her by, but not really far enough. She is a little kid.
Right.
She can't beat trained armed soldiers by herself.
No.
But I've got my fingers crossed that some combination of Jaqen, Nymeria, and Weasel can go one better and free them all.
The Weasel.
That's my hope. Here.
Weasel is the key to it all. That's what we're going to discover. But, I mean, now the Lannisters have Arya. They just don't know they have Arya. You know?
Right.
Can they not kill her before they realize that they have her?
Right.
That's
And can Gendry get away from them before they realize that they have him?
Right, yeah. They've got both people that are being hunted for. Mm-hmm. They just have no idea that they have both of these people.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But what
the
happens?
Photo fit hasn't made it to Harry.
Right, yeah. What happens if they do confirm that they... What happens if they kill her and then they confirm, oh, that was Arya Stark of Winterfell that we... I guess then they just pretend that... Nope, never saw her.
The storehouse dentist will confirm her identity from her records.
Dental records. Yes. They're in trouble now.
All right. As always, you can reach us at ghost.harrenhal@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at ghostharrenhal. We're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Discord.
That we are. And if you wouldn't mind going out and leaving us a 5-star rate and or a fantastic review, we certainly would appreciate that, especially if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts. We're really trying to grow our presence there, and the best way we can do that is with a bunch of rates and reviews from you all, so we would very much appreciate doing that. And hey, we might read your review on a future episode.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.